Both today and next week, we're going to be spending a little time with Paul's letter to the church at Galatia. Paul considers it under attack from what he considers to be false teachers. And so he's really kind of defending himself, defending the church. And what we hear in today's text is really Paul, in his own words, sharing a bit of his faith journey. So in the first chapter, we pick it up at the 11th verse. "For I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel that was proclaimed by me is not of human origin. For I did not receive it from a human source, nor was I taught it, but I received it through a revelation of Jesus Christ. You have heard, no doubt, of my earlier life in Judaism. I was violently persecuting the church of God and was trying to destroy it. I advanced in Judaism beyond many among my people of the same age, for I was far more zealous for the traditions of my ancestors. But when God, who had set me apart before I was born and called me through his grace, was pleased to reveal his son to me, so that I might proclaim him among the Gentiles. I did not confer with any human being, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were already apostles before me. But I went away at once into Arabia, and afterwards I returned to Damascus. Then after 3 years, I did go up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas and stayed with him 15 days. But I did not see any other apostle except James, the Lord's brother. In what I am writing to you before God, I do not lie. I then went to the regions of Syria and Cilicia, and I was still unknown by sight to the members of the churches of Judea who are in Christ. They only heard it said, 'The one who formerly was persecuting us is now proclaiming the faith he once tried to destroy.' And they glorified God because of me." And may God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. My chief mentor in ministry, Bill Nelson, no relation, shares this story. Years ago, my wife and I were vacationing in Maine. We stumbled onto a quaint old Revolutionary period home and barn. A small placard announced, "Grandma's Antiques." We were fascinated by this barn full of relics, which to me looked mostly like the discards of every attic in Maine. When I made some such observation to Grandma, as she insisted on being called, she said, "You're right. I buy junk, but I sell antiques." You know, her comment makes me think of our own local artist, Patrick Amio. As you know, during the construction of Pilgrim Center, Tom Dilley, Keith Blackstone, and I took our Noah's Ark, a Patrick original, over to a studio south of town to be refurbished. He sanded it down, repaired it, completely repainted it. It looks beautiful if you haven't looked at it up close. I think I've told you before that during construction, the question that was most often asked of me by members of the community is, "What did you do with the ark, and when are you bringing it back?" That's great. That's just what we wanted. We're no longer the church just past Taco Bell now, you know. We've finally become the church where you see the ark. But, you know, it was amazing to be able to wander around Patrick's work area down there. And at first glance, it just looked like a place piled with junk. Well, it is a place piled with junk. Broken appliances, car parts, pieces of tools, you name it, he has it. But in his skilled hands, trash is turned into treasure. I see a rusted car frame. He sees a hippopotamus. I see a cast-off pipe. He sees the neck of a giraffe. I see a broken clock face. He sees a human face. Junk becomes art that, by the way, is sold for thousands of dollars. I suppose his slogan could be, I buy junk, I sell expensive art. Well, it occurs to me that in Grandma's slogan, in the art of Patrick, we have a good reminder of what Jesus was about most of the time. He took men and women, many of whom people would call life's discards, and restored them to a new and hopeful humanity. You might say he was a recycler of people. And it was this ability to take a broken life and restore it to wholeness, the ability to see and uncover the treasure of every life, this is what gave such force to the word gospel. Good news. And exhibit A of this human recycling process would be none other than the Apostle Paul. We heard the dramatic story of his personal transformation in our text this morning in his own words. We learned how he was transformed from a dedicated Pharisee consumed with rage at the new teachings of Jesus, a persecutor of the church, transformed into one of the gospel's most forceful evangelists, a founder of churches. According to Paul, his life stands as a testimony to the free and freeing good news of Christ, good news that can touch and restore the life of anyone, the last, the least, the lost, you and me. A story told by United Church of Christ pastor Lillian Daniel. Some of you have heard this before. My parents collected beautiful, delicate pottery from Southeast Asia. Since these pieces were arranged around the house just out of the reach of running children and frisky dogs, it was not until I was a teenager that I noticed a vase that, just did not fit with the rest of the collection. It had once been a fine antique with a cream glaze and a blue Japanese design, but now it was damaged. It stood amid the finer pieces, a mass of cracks crudely glued together, which was with what was obviously the wrong adhesive, glue that had bubbled out yellow as it dried and now kind of just looked like scabrous scars. Why did you get rid of that one? I asked my mother. Never, she replied. It's the most valuable piece of pottery in this house. Then she told me the story behind the cracked vase. When I was a toddler, my journalist father was covering the Vietnam War, moving in and out of war zones for weeks at a time. When he returned home, he brought a piece of Asian pottery to add to my mother's collection. This vase was one of the finest he'd found, and he wrapped it in string and brown paper and carried it carefully on several airplanes and buses before finally walking up the driveway with this very special present in his hands. But at that very moment, I, his 2-year-old daughter, rushed forward, my arms outstretched for an embrace. Surprised and elated, my father could not push me aside to put down the vase. Instead, he simply opened his arms. As I fell into them, the vase fell on the ground and broke into pieces. That night, my mother pulled out the glue, clumsily repaired the vase, and pronounced it precious, cracks and all. Could there be a word here for the church? It can be exhausting moving about in a society, a job, a family, or a church that seems to have no room for flaws or mistakes. I think of all those Christmas cards from friends over the years showing these absolutely perfect families Why can't my family look like that? Of course, a photo doesn't tell the whole story, but man, they sure look good. Not a cracked vase in sight. Order and flawlessness can be so seductive in the midst of a chaotic world or personal life. But then we step out of a perfection-driven world and come to worship, and what do we hear? This is my body, broken for you. Broken, flawed, not perfect. Here on Sunday morning, imperfection? How can this be? Says Lillian and Daniel, the church presents a different understanding of brokenness. When we gather around the communion table, it is in the breaking of the bread, tearing it out of the perfection of a formed loaf and leaving the edges jagged, that we remember Jesus. His words render absurd our human preoccupation with perfection. True beauty comes not from the flawless piece, nor from the piece that pretends to have no crack. On Sunday morning, we acknowledge that our salvation lies in God's broken, imperfect body. But in the frantic pace of efforts to create more programs, attract more people, to sell ourselves to the world, the congregation, and sadly, certainly the minister, can forget the beauty of being broken and instead want to be a congregation that appears to be without flaw or fault. And so, happily married, a couple attended church. But after their painful divorce, they wondered if they were still welcomed, still belonged. Everyone else looked and seemed so happy. Was there room in the church for their pain, their brokenness? Family with a troubled child? Gosh, we don't look like that picture. Is there room here for us? Are we open to the beauty of the cracked vase? You know, it just might be that it is only when we acknowledge that beauty, let go of our obsession with perfection, and acknowledge our own shared brokenness, it might be only then that the hungry are fed, the homeless sheltered, the wounded cared for, the grieving comforted. Because only then can we really share God's grace, share our faith, our hope that all of our cracks, all of our brokenness, all of our imperfections find a home in the open arms of Christ. You know, I read our text, and it seems to me that at times Paul is just completely amazed at what has happened to him. How could he, the persecutor, have been transformed into the proclaimer? He knows it's not because of how clean and superior and perfect he's been. No, this is God's work. It is only through the love and acceptance of God's amazing grace. And his point is plain. He wants us to know that what God in Christ has done for him, God can do for each of us, because God simply cannot tolerate a 1% lost, not where people are concerned. Everyone, absolutely everyone, is precious to God. Not tossed aside, not forgotten, not given up on, but rather accepted, able to be recycled and restored. Well, that is the attitude. That's the faith I hope we can communicate week after week in this place. Namely, that you don't have to run away from yourself into drugs or alcohol or a violently busy social life or to some tempting affair or into working every hour of every day just to get yourself off your hands. Neither do you have to hide from yourself as though you were unimportant, worthless, too hopelessly lost ever to be found. No. Not when you were grabbed by the awareness, as was Paul, of just how precious you are to God and likely to a great many other persons as well. It can be a life-transforming discovery, providing new reason to come alive and stay alive, as a broken life becomes a precious work of art. And again, hopefully this church, as broken and bent and imperfect as we often are, this church can still be the place where we witness to the power and promise of this amazing grace of God. As someone from the Quaker tradition once wrote, "I reaffirm my birth each and every morning, and I say to God, I thank you that you choose life, that my parents made the decision for me then, but I make the decision now. I am glad I was born, and I'm glad for this new day." By God's grace, may we choose to be born again into every moment as something special, as God's gift and God's promise.
As we come to this time of offering, I'd like to invite you to sign the Who's Who in the pew pad, which you'll find in the middle aisles. Please pass that back and forth with each other so we can